Ready to connect with the investment community here in Cleveland? Want to learn about the people, events, projects, and firms that are making a difference? Want all that but feel like you don't have the time? This is the show for you. Welcome to Guardians of Finance. Brought to you by the CFA Society of Cleveland and hosted by Matt McLaughlin, portfolio specialist at Diamond Hill Capital Management, Guardians of Finance will provide you with a chance to foster deeper connections and know what is getting the attention of Cleveland's investment community. Subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform and head to guardiansoffinance.com where you can connect or reconnect with the CFA Society of Cleveland and attend an educational or social event and find volunteer opportunities. And now, here's your host, Matt McLaughlin.
Welcome to the Guardians of Finance podcast. I am your host, Matt McLaughlin. In this episode, we talk with Lauren Rich Fine, CFA and Senior Managing Director at Greece Financial. Lauren has a long and distinguished career in financial services that took her to Wall Street for a time period before she returned to her roots here in Cleveland. Lauren is also a woman of many passions outside of the workplace. We talk about the challenges early in her career and why she moved back to Cleveland, as well as her passion for the arts, service on numerous nonprofit boards, and much more in this wide-ranging conversation. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode with Lauren Rich Fine. Lauren, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
When I was doing a little bit of research beforehand for this podcast, I typically just go on LinkedIn profiles and read maybe a professional bio that's available online. You have a pretty extensive bio, and I might say one of the more extensive ones we've had. So maybe that's a good jumping off point. Give us the high level. You don't have to go through it in every detail yet, but a little about your background, your current position, and your connection to Cleveland.
Absolutely. And the key, by the way, to why I have so many things on my bio is I sleep less than the average person. So currently, I'm a senior managing director at Greece Financial Partners, and I really have a number of different responsibilities, but I'll take you backwards first. I actually started investing in high school. My father treated me as though I was his only son because he had no sons, and he taught me about the market and PEs and everything else. And I actually made enough money that I was able to pay for my first husband's business school education, which was very gratifying. But my first job was at Merrill Lynch in the economics department, and I got a sense of what the people on the operating side were doing. I thought it was pretty interesting, although at the time I still didn't really know what I wanted to do. We moved to California so my husband could go to business school, and I worked in Treasury at National Semiconductor. And when we came back, I went into Treasury at Merrill Lynch. And again, I was on the staff side and trying to figure out what I was doing wrong. And I got a call from a friend of mine who had been in the economics department and asked if I wanted to interview for a sell-side equity research position. I had no clue what that was. I did a little research. I went in and did what I do oh so well, which is I BS'd my way through the interview. And I had gone through, I missed this, I'd gone through credit training at Chemical Bank, but never actually ended up being a loan officer. And I think that the man who hired me was intrigued that I understood cash flow analysis, how to do projections from learning how to be a commercial lender. And so he hired me, and I had a very storied career there. I was there close to 20 years, and I covered the media industry. I was their first internet analyst. I covered the for-profit education sector briefly as well. And then I did advertising and marketing services. So I was kind of a workhorse for them. And so when I asked halfway through my career if I could move to Cleveland and work from here, they really couldn't say no because they would have had to hire four people to replace me, which goes back to the I don't sleep very much theme. And I did that right through getting divorced and realized I wasn't able to travel as much, or I should say didn't want to travel as much as a result of that. And so I took a little time off, reincarnated as a headhunter at Howard and O'Brien here in Cleveland. And I did that and I enjoyed it, but it wasn't challenging enough for me. And so I started to do a search among all of the registered investment advisors in Cleveland to see if there was an opportunity where I could come in and get some management opportunity, some ownership opportunity, and be back in the markets again. And I was really fortunate to come to Greece Financial, where at the time I bought out the remaining 10% from Sally Greece, the founder of the firm. And that's where I've been for about 7.5, almost 8 years now.
Such an interesting background there. And there's multiple things I want to dive into. But first, you mentioned that your father got you into investing and kind of was the first person to maybe challenge you intellectually on that front. What was it about finance / investing at the time that really interested you and got you hooked?
I suppose at the very core, it was just something fun to do with my dad besides playing tennis. And I love the number side of it. I've always been a numbers person. And then at the same time, I love the storytelling behind it as I got to know the companies and the businesses they were in. I was doing pretty straight and narrow types of things. I mean, I remember one of my biggest investments was Pacific Gas and Electric because I like the dividend, and something called MACOM, where I have no idea why I ended up on that one. I can't remember, but I did kind of buy and hold. I didn't trade a lot, but we just had fun looking at them together and trying to identify, mostly using PEs at the time, because I can't say my dad was particularly sophisticated about it, but just trying to find some stocks. And then he would challenge me to do the research. And so the fact that I ended up as a sell-side equity analyst, I can give my dad direct credit for that.
But yet you're a sell-side analyst on what seems to be, and tell me if I'm wrong, and there's more growthy sectors. So are you a growth investor or value investor, if you consider them opposites, which I know many people do not? I know I'm one of those.
Funny enough, today I do very little investing in individual equities, almost none. And I think it's because for almost 20 years, I had every possible resource at my fingertips, including being able to call the CEO and the CFO. But really, when I left Wall Street, and this was back in the 2006-07 range, even then, fundamental analysis had changed. And the market was being heavily influenced by the hedge funds and by all sorts of different types of option strategies. And so you could get the fundamentals right and still get the stock wrong. And so I don't know that I've ever looked at it as any particular area that interested me. I think I was given an industry to cover, and I made sure I knew a lot about the industry. I understood what drove it. And I don't know that I would say media was really growth. I think they were mature industries. So I'd say I'm opportunistic. And the reason I don't do the individual equities today is I feel like I don't know enough. And even if I did, I don't know that I would get it right. At Greece, we do a lot in private investments, and that's where I've just become, from my own portfolio, enamored. But you know, it all comes down to what your liquidity needs are and everything else. So that's a whole different conversation.
I think you mentioned that early on in your career, you worked for a national semiconductor. Do you still follow the semiconductor sector? And I know you said not individual equities, but a lot going on there with NVIDIA and AI and whatnot. Do you still keep in touch with that, or is that part of your past?
That is definitely part of my past, although I read a book recently. I can't remember the author's name, but it was called Chip Wars, and it was fascinating. I'd highly recommend it, especially in view of what's going on today.
Chris Miller, one of my favorite recent reads.
Yeah, it was great.
I would echo that. It's very good. Talk to me a little about, you said kind of early on your career, or relatively early on your career, you got a job at Merrill Lynch and had a really successful career there. The profession, the finance industry, was probably even more male-dominated at that point. Talk to people about the challenges of being a female in a male-dominated industry at the time, and maybe how you overcame those and takeaways that you still carry with you today. What made you successful?
It's funny. I get asked that a lot because you're right. It was very male-dominated. I don't think I even noticed that. I think I'm just competitive enough that I just got in there and wanted to be really good at what I was doing. I was really fortunate that the research director for most of the time that I was there was one of the least chauvinistic men at the time that I'd ever met. And I think he wanted me to be successful. I think the man who trained me really wanted me to be successful. I did encounter issues along the way, but I didn't even get it at the time. It's more in retrospect, as I've been asked to look back, that I can see instances in my career where, because I was a woman, somebody tried to put a roadblock in my place, or tried to harass me, or other things. I've always been, my kids used to call me the queen of comeback. I'd moved to Cleveland at this point, and I was back in New York for an analyst meeting, and the meeting had just let out, and we were all in the elevator bank, and one of my male competitors said, "We all know you've checked out, and you're really just playing mommy back in Cleveland." And I looked at him, and I said, "It must be really tough for you. You don't even have children. I have children. I cover three industries. You cover one. And yet I trounce you every day. But if that's how you want to deal with it, you go for it." And everybody started laughing. And I thought, this isn't that hard. It really isn't. I don't like that side of me. That's not who I want to be. And which is why I'm much happier to be back in Cleveland, where I don't have to have sharp elbows. But I could do it. And I guess I just never really thought about it. But I will tell you, it was a running joke in the family. My dad had two daughters, and he treated me like his only son. I was the tennis player. I was a tomboy. I was happy to look at the stock market with him. I probably just didn't think about it.
Were you always competitive from a young age, or is that something that developed over your childhood?
I'm competitive against myself, and people might say that's wrong, but I really have always been hard on myself. It's never about the other person. I don't take pleasure out of beating somebody else because I feel badly. I'm too empathic for that. But I do remember when I used to play doubles with my first husband, he'd go, "How can you not be more competitive on the tennis court when you're out there being competitive all day on Wall Street?" I'm like, "I don't know." I think I just always wanted to do the best job I could. And when you're a sell-side analyst, it's very easy to see if you're doing a good job or you're not. Anybody who's investing knows each day if they're doing a good job. And I think that played to my strength, that I could always look at it and say, I can do better than this.
Is it the thrill of winning that drives you, or the fear of losing that drives you?
I think a healthy combination of both. Probably it's more the fear of losing if I had to choose one or the other.
Oh, that's great. Cleveland, obviously, you mentioned you grew up here and you came back to Cleveland. Why move back to Cleveland? You mentioned it a little bit before, but what about the city, the people, whatnot, was the driving force of you wanting to move back mid-career? You're living in New York, I think you said. Like, why move back to Cleveland at the time?
My first husband was my high school sweetheart. And so we both had had the incredible childhood growing up in Shaker Heights, had both sets of our parents were alive at the time and we were close and they were close with each other. And we sort of vowed we never really wanted to raise our kids in New York. And he was an investment banker at Goldman Sachs. I'm this hotshot analyst at Merrill Lynch, and we had whatever we wanted there. But we woke up and went, wait, we had a six-year-old and a three-year-old. And we're like, wait, we didn't mean to do this. And he didn't love his career. He really wanted to make a change. And he explored, found an opportunity. We thought about other cities, but we thought that's crazy. We've got two sets of grandparents. It's a great, affordable city, and people are nice here. And we fit into New York, but we didn't want to. We were able to. So he went ahead, found the opportunity that would make him happy in Cleveland. And then I went to Merrill Lynch and they laughed. They said, "We always knew you would want to move. We didn't figure it would be Cleveland." And by the way, at that point, I was covering the internet. So they thought it was hilarious that they were going to have an internet analyst in Cleveland. I said, "Well, better way to prove that the internet gives you these opportunities." And so they said, "That's great, but we want you to work from home because we think there's a compliance issue if you work in one of our offices." And it's like, okay, you don't have to ask me twice. And it really worked out well. But, you know, again, that's pretty progressive of them that they let me do it. I bumped into the then CEO when he was in Cleveland once for the Rock Hall inductions when they were in Cleveland. And he was patting himself on the shoulder too, that he had let me do that. That had been highly unusual. They'd only had one other analyst ever do that. And she was training to be a speed skater in the Olympics. I figured I was just trying to be a better mother. It's funny. So when I got divorced, a lot of people presumed I'd move back to New York. And I'm like, you missed the point. I love Cleveland. I really wanted to be here. I meet the best people here. We have every bit of culture you could ever want, every bit of outdoor activity you could ever imagine doing. And we've got this beautiful lake, which I now live right on the lake. And so I couldn't be happier here.
Do you ever miss New York?
No, I mean, I like New York a lot. I have a son who lives there and I was just there 2 weekends ago. So I get my fix occasionally. And every once in a while, I flirt with getting an apartment there. And then it's like, why would I do that? I can go and stay in a hotel. It's fine.
You've been working for Greece now for how long? And it has been in mostly a advisor, high net worth kind of role, or has your career path at Greece evolved or changed at all since you first joined?
So I joined in June of 2016. So I'm sort of right between that 7.5 to 8 year mark. And when I came in, kind of a slow beginning, but essentially I helped transition most of Sally Greece's book of business to myself and other people. We always put two people on every account and we always try to match somebody who's got more of a planning background with somebody with more of an investment background. And over time, it blurs because you really get to know both sides of the business. So I was working on a lot and still am working on a lot of the legacy clients of the firm. I was also charged with coming up with new business strategies, working with the other advisors to help them develop their strategies. And then because I was a headhunter for 5 years, I handled a lot of the hiring for the firm. We were just going through hiring some more people, and we've been expanding geographically. And then really with a couple of other people, I oversee some of the marketing for the firm as well, which is minimal at our firm, but looking at sponsorships and different types of opportunities. And so I've always had sort of an eclectic group of responsibilities, which I still do. And so I more or less oversee some of the advisors, but really more from the perspective of helping them grow.
You mentioned you're expanding geographically. Where are you guys expanding to? And is there a long-term plan that Greece is undergoing to grow the business?
Well, Greece Financial was acquired in June or July, I can't remember now which, of 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic. And the company was never put up for sale. It was very opportunistic. And so we are owned by a subsidiary of Delta Dental of Michigan. And that subsidiary is called the 4100 Group. It's more or less a private equity arm of Delta Dental, who was interested in staying loosely in the financial services industry and diversifying their cash flow. And they have given us the capital we need to expand. And so some of the focus has been on their footprint because Delta Dental of Michigan has a 7-state footprint in terms of from a managerial perspective. But at the same time, thanks to the pandemic, we realized people could live anywhere and have clients anywhere. And so I don't know that we have specific targets geographically, but we're in Florida, Michigan, New York. We're in Nashville. I know I'm missing something somewhere. We just hired somebody who will start soon, who will be in Kansas City. But again, that's where the person we wanted to hire was. It wasn't because we were looking specifically at Kansas City. And so we're really just interested in bringing in people who know how to do the job. I think we care a lot about the planning background because the investment piece is a little bit more centralized, and really see the opportunity to take kind of that boutique level of service that we offer, because that's what we really pride ourselves on, and sort of take it on the road pretty much anywhere. I'd say what probably distinguishes us from a number of our peers, although not all of them, but 5 or 6 years ago, probably it was most of them, is I mentioned earlier, we do a lot in private investments. Our chief investment officer, Ken Brockowitz, has an amazing background. He had been at Goldman, and then he was at two very storied hedge funds before he started his own. And he had promised his wife he would quit in his mid-40s. And his business school roommate is our now CEO of the firm, Rob Herman. And so he came over sort of figuring he could manage his own portfolio and be our chief investment officer. He's incredibly connected. And so we get a lot of different types of private investments. And it enables us to bring in a lot of really interesting folks who could be head of some of the private equity firms or other places that want to diversify their private portfolio, and we can do that for them. He's been able to attract a lot of really interesting investors, and we also follow the same strategy a lot of other people do, looking for people who are selling a business, people going through divorce, someone's passed away and they come into money. But we have tax people, we have people who can do estate planning strategy, and so we can really do the full range of services. But a lot of people do just come to us for the investment side because we do a pretty good job there.
On a volunteer front, I noticed that you are a member of quite a few different organizations, or at least been a member of different boards. What all are you involved with on a board front and some of the maybe charitable or outside of Greece organizations that you're really passionate about that you're currently involved with?
Well, by definition, I'm passionate about all of them because my free time is very valuable to me, and I would only spend time if I cared. Right now, I probably can't get this all right, but I'm on the Cleveland Museum of Art board. I chair the finance committee. I've always loved art. I don't really know much about it, but I always seem to own a lot of it. And I really enjoy that board quite a bit. And I feel like I've been able to really dig in on the finance side there. I am on the East Side Market for University Hospitals. I just rejoined that. I had been on Ahuja a few years ago, but they restructured it. And so I just got asked to rejoin again. I am on College Now board, which I'm very passionate about. Over 10 years ago, I helped them launch a mentoring program that's been really successful. I mean, I just had the idea. They had to do all the hard work. But that's something I'm very passionate about. We're always trying to find new mentors for that program. Until recently, I was on the IdeaStream board, which sort of gave me my media fix. And I'm not thinking clearly right now, but I was until recently on the investment committee at Ursuline, for the Ursuline Nuns. I was on the investment committee at the Federation, but I turned out of one and really didn't have enough time for the other. Not as many as I used to be. Oh, and I can't believe I forgot this one, the Cleveland International Film Festival, where I'm currently chairing the search for their new executive director. And I think it's been taking up so much of my time, I forgot about it momentarily. And I love movies, and so that's just a great fit for me. The first board I was ever on was Urban Community School, which is still a place that I'm very, very passionate about. And so I think I'm some type of emeriti board member there and still try to help whenever I can. I care a lot about education. I care a lot about giving back to Cleveland. It's just a great way to stay connected to people and use your skill set in a different way.
You mentioned interest in art. Did you say you have a collection? And I'd love to hear a little bit more about that if you give us an overview of how you dabble in it.
Well, calling it a collection might overstate. I do own a lot of art, but I'm not sure most people would give it credit for being a collection. I like contemporary art. I started out by buying what's known as outsider or self-taught artists. They tend to be not quite like folk art, but they're a little rough around the edges, and sometimes they're more three-dimensional, sculptural in nature. For some reason, those just really resonate for me, but I've progressed over time, and I have a lot of photography, but there's no way to tie it all together except for that it's sort of in your face. And so, you know, I have a second home in Chautauqua, New York, and that's kind of the joke that I needed a second home for all my artwork, although that sounds really bad. But I do love art, and I sort of know when I see something if it really hits me and if I want to own it, but I rarely make impulsive decisions. I usually walk away and make sure I'm still thinking about it a few days later and then go back and think about buying it. I used to be on the Museum of Contemporary Art Board in Cleveland also. I did that for a couple of terms, and I had promised coming in I would just do it for two terms. I'm trying to get better about setting boundaries when I join boards.
And that question was coming from someone who jokingly definitely has one piece of art and call it my collection. So,
well, there you go.
You have more than one.
If you ever need help, I'm always happy to spend other people's money.
Fair enough. If I get to that point, you will be my first call.
All right, good.
What other passion do you have? You mentioned, obviously, boards, and I'm sure family is passion, like movies. What else is there? I feel like you're a very diverse interest person.
Yeah, I would say two things. I'm a voracious reader. I challenge myself to read or listen to over 100 books a year. And it's really eclectic. I like fiction. I like nonfiction. I like memoirs. I like non-narrative fiction. Really a lot of different things. And then I guess that leads to going to a lot of lectures to hear both authors and other people speak. But I love staying in shape. I run almost every day. I try to do weights a couple times a week. I try to do yoga a couple times a week. And in better weather, I try to get out on my bicycle, though that's not a huge passion of mine. I'm just trying to mix it up a bit. And I actually just started running races two summers ago, which has been pretty funny, because what I don't know about it would fill volumes. And so the fact that I'm alive at the end of any race is really a positive for me.
Do you have a favorite metro park that you like to run in?
Well, I live right at Edgewater Beach, so that's where I spend most of my running time, because it's just right out my front door. The Rocky River Reserve, I like that as well. Those are probably my two favorites.
That question was kind of one of the, what we call the rapid fire questions. So I think I've kind of dove into that. But if it's okay with you, I'd love to dive into a couple other rapid fire questions, if that's okay.
You got it. Absolutely.
All right. Do you have a nickname?
I have a lot of nicknames, none of which I'm going to repeat right now.
Fair enough.
Not ones I want to hear anybody else call me. We'll stick with Lauren. Some people call me LDR. My family growing up called me Lolly. I hated that, but I raised one of my nieces, my sister, who unfortunately passed away at 41. She had always heard my sister refer to me as Lolly, and so she still calls me Lolly, and all of her friends do too. So I sort of can't get rid of it, but I don't advise anybody thinking they're being funny calling me that. They might lose a limb.
Fair enough. We will advise maybe put it in the disclosures to not use these nicknames.
Yes. Do not use these nicknames. Exactly.
We don't want to make our guests mad. We usually ask about hobbies, but I feel like you've answered that question already with just the conversation so far.
Well, travel. I would answer one last piece. Travel. I've been to 76 or 77 countries.
Oh, wow. Any top two or three there that you're like, wow, that's one of my favorites, or those couple of my favorites?
Morocco and Turkey are two of my favorites, but I just went to Cuba in December and I love that. I think I just appreciated it. It's probably not the same as Turkey and Morocco. And then I've traveled a bit in Africa and I really appreciate and enjoy that travel too, but it's very different. I love to travel.
What's at the top of your bucket list right now for travel destinations?
Well, I'm going to Argentina in a couple of months. So knock that one off the list.
All over Argentina or major cities, Patagonia, where are you going?
Patagonia and Buenos Aires. And then I'll make it up to the falls for a day.
Oh, fun. Favorite book about investing or finance?
I don't have one of those. Sorry. I try not to read too many of those. I have, but none of them would strike me as must reads.
Any hidden talents?
None. No.
It's okay. We're a financial podcast, so we're not the most interesting from a hidden talent perspective group.
I think my family would tell you that I'm a good chef.
Oh, what's your favorite recipe to cook?
I'm a plant-based diet person, and so my favorite is a za'atar spiced chickpea and tofu dish that I've yet to meet a person who, even when they don't like tofu, doesn't love this dish.
That sounds delicious. Is that part of your reason for Turkey and Morocco being some of your favorite destinations, kind of that Mediterranean food?
No, it was really just the variety of landscapes, the people, how different the cultures were. But I love the food in both places, and I love pretty much any food.
Favorite lunch spot in Cleveland?
I go to Bet's a lot just because it's convenient, but they also have a great number of offerings for me on a plant-based diet because it can be a little tricky with a plant-based diet to find things. So that's right on East 9th Street.
Any shows you're watching right now that are really good?
For somebody who used to analyze media for a living, people are surprised to learn I don't really watch TV. So the answer to that is no. However, I have a friend who's decided that I need to watch every episode of Ted Lasso. So I'm catching up on Ted Lasso, which I love, which is perfectly my sense of humor. But occasionally I'll get involved. There was a Netflix show that I had to see because a friend of ours' daughter was in it. But no, I love movies, but I don't tend to watch much TV.
Ted Lasso is one of my personal favorites, so definitely agree with you there. Typically, we ask about most memorable Cleveland sports moment, which you may be a sports fan, but given your knowledge of the arts and the fine arts, and it sounds like you're really involved in that scene in Cleveland, I'll ask more of a fine arts related question. What has been your favorite fine arts performance that you've seen or experienced here in Cleveland?
That's a tough one that would take some thought. I mean, I love most of the exhibitions at the Cleveland Museum of Art. I think they're extraordinary. And even things I don't expect to like, they had an exhibit on the Tudors that I thought this is going to be a big yawn, and it was phenomenal. But I love their contemporary art collection. They have a program where they bring in musicians, sometimes from other countries, and I've seen some great jazz there. I love the Bop Stop. I think they do an amazing job. And I'm going to see John Batiste this weekend, which I have high expectations for. And that's at the museum, which is why I mentioned it under arts.
That sounds great. I'll throw out the sports question to you as well. Do you have a favorite Cleveland sports moment?
I don't have a favorite Cleveland sports moment. I do like sports. I have made it to at least a couple football games a year for the last couple of years, but I have to thank University Hospitals for that. They've spoiled me. I like live basketball. And the only issue, and I guess this would be a hidden thing about me, not a lot of people know, is I've had 5 concussions. And so I can't last for an entire live basketball game because the noise gets to me, which is really unfortunate because I do really enjoy live basketball.
We're recording this in late February and our Cavs have been looking pretty good for the last couple of months. So let's hope that continues. And when this comes out, we're still there.
Well, and it was a great football season too. It didn't have the ending we could have dreamed about, but it was still a pretty great season.
Agreed. That's the end of my rapid fire questions. Lauren, hopefully that wasn't too painful. I feel like you're okay with that.
You made it fun, so thank you very much. I really appreciate your doing that.
Sure, and thank you for coming on the podcast.
Well, you do a great job, so keep it up. Thank you.
You've been listening to Guardians of Finance, brought to you by the CFA Society of Cleveland. Subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform and head on over to guardiansoffinance.com where you can connect or reconnect with the CFA Society of Cleveland, attend an educational or social event, and find volunteer opportunities. Thanks, and we'll see you next time on Guardians of Finance.